Good morning. I'm Jeff. Great to be with you this morning. And I can remember from my school days and my uni days that if there was one thing worse than getting an assignment, it was getting a group assignment. Because when you get a group assignment, it's not just down to what you know or what you can do, but you are relying on the other people in the group. Let me see if you can recognize this scenario, this example of a group assignment that I'm going to share with you. Four people in this group assignment. The teacher assigned the people in the group. You didn't get to choose. And person one does 99% of the work. Person two has no idea what's going on the whole time. Person three says that she's going to help, but she doesn't. And person four disappears at the very beginning and doesn't show up again until the very end. Now, I didn't want to cause any traumatic memories, but some of you can remember group assignments like this. And if you work in a place where you have to kind of do projects together as a group, you're like, well, this is my everyday reality still. What about this example? This is a little bit more equal. You know, the group assignment is given, four people in the group, and person one says, okay, well, I'll do questions 1 to 3. Person two says, that's good, I'll do questions 4 to 6. Person three jumping in, fantastic, I'll do question 7 and I'll write the introduction and the conclusion. And person four, oh, guess I can print it and hand it in. This problem with group assignments has been happening for a long time. In the year 44 BC, Julius Caesar was assassinated by a group assignment. 60 people agreed that they were going to assassinate Julius Caesar. His time was done. It was time to get rid of him. But at the end of the day, when he was lying there dead on the floor, he only had 23 stab wounds. Even way back then, not all the members in a group assignment would contribute. Now, occasionally you get a dream team. Occasionally you get to choose the members of your group. Your squad ends up together and you smash that assignment and you enjoy it and it's fun and you get it done. Everyone contributes, but more often group assignments are frustrating because they require, shockingly, that we work together with other people. People with varying levels of commitment and contribution. And despite having full knowledge that this was a problem, Jesus gave group assignments. We often read Jesus' words and his instructions personally, individually for ourselves, and that's right and appropriate, but it's not the whole story. Jesus often gave group assignments, instructions to a group of people and not just to one person. And so today, even through Jesus' words recorded in the Bible, through his Spirit speaking to us, Jesus can give you and can give I personal guidance, personal wisdom, personal instructions, which is for us. But in the same way, through his words in the Bible, through his Spirit today, Jesus can give us, groups of people, guidance and instructions and ask us to do things that require us to work together. And so we're going to look today at two of Jesus' group assignments, the two biggies. We're going to look at the Great Commandment and we're going to look at the Great Commission and what they mean for us. So in Matthew chapter 22, the religious leaders, as they always did in Jesus' lifetime, were working hard to try and trap him into saying something incriminating. And there were two main groups with power in Jesus' day, in the place where he lived. There were the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And they agreed on lots of things, but there was some stuff they disagreed on, and they often fought together. But if there was one thing that could quickly unite them, it was their hatred of Jesus and wanting to get rid of him. And so in Matthew 22, they take turns trying to trap him into saying something that would give them cause to get rid of him, to kill him. And it's the Pharisees' turn in Matthew 22, verse 34. But when the Pharisees heard that Jesus had silenced the Sadducees with his reply, they met again together to question him. And one of them, an expert in religious law, tried to trap him with this question. Teacher, which is the most important commandment in the law of Moses? Now, this is not a genuine question. He isn't asking the question because he wants to know the answer from Jesus. And they haven't come up with this question because together they don't know and they want this wisdom from Jesus. They're not coming to him saying, oh, you are so wise and we really respect you. We've been talking about this and we're not sure. What do you think? That's not what was going on. They came up with this question to try and trap him. This was something that they already had an answer for in their heads. This was a test. What is he going to say? Who will he identify with? Which party is he going to claim to be part of with his answer? And we're sure that he's going to give us an answer that will mean we can trap him into being in front of the court, maybe even to killing him. But Jesus, as he so often did, managed to step above all of that, to get beneath the real core of the issue and what was being talked about. And this is what he said. Jesus replied in verse 37, you must love the Lord your God. He's quoting here. You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. And he said, this is the first and the greatest commandment. And the second is equally important. Again, quoting, love your neighbor as yourself. The entire law and all the demands of the prophets are based on these two commandments. And so Jesus quoted these two lines word for word from the Old Testament, from the law of Moses, from the first five books in the Old Testament, and specifically from Deuteronomy and from Leviticus. And Jesus plucks them out from 613 options. There are 613 commandments in those first five books in the Old Testament. And Jesus just reaches in and pulls out two of them. And he said, these two. These are the most important. And not only are they the most important, everything rests on these. You can sum up everything, not just those first five books, not just the law of Moses, but all the prophets as well. The whole Old Testament, your Bible as you know it, which is all they had in those days. Everything can be summed up with these two quotes. Now, I think that Christians like me usually will read Jesus' words and apply it to ourselves. This is a personal command. This is mine to do. I must love God and I must love other people. But this was also a group assignment. Jesus was speaking to a group of people. Jesus was responding to the questions of a group. And here and in lots of other places, Jesus applies this same commandment, the essence of this, to groups of people, to anyone who would ever follow after him. And the other thing that helps us know that it's a group assignment is that half of it is impossible without other people. You can't love your neighbour as yourself if you don't have a neighbour. It's impossible. And Jesus doesn't mean your literal neighbour, even though that's a good person to start with if they live next door to you. The word neighbour just means another person. It's impossible to fulfil that second half of Jesus' command without other people. And so you could live entirely by yourself in the desert or on a deserted island with no one else around, and you would not be able to fulfill what Jesus is asking of you because there are no other people to fulfill that with. You can't love another person if you never talk to them. And the kind of love that Jesus is talking about, you know, we only have one word for love and we have to add other words to describe what we mean, but Jesus had a choice. There are different words he could have chosen to use to say love, and he chose the one which is the most all-encompassing, the most unconditional kind of love for God and for other people, the same word, and also it's active. You can't just love in your heart. I can't love you if we never interact. I can't love you if we never speak. It's literally impossible in what Jesus is saying to love without interacting and treating each other differently and speaking to each other. It's that gritty, active kind of love. And Jesus puts them side by side. Actually, Jesus puts them together. He says, the second is equally important. You can't love God if you aren't loving other people. And you can't really love other people if you aren't loving God. We don't call these the two greatest commandments of Jesus. This is our summary in 2,000 years of history. We don't call these the two greatest commandments. We call them the great commandment because Jesus put them together. They go hand in hand, and this is an assignment that you cannot do on your own. And then submit it as if the others helped you. This is not a group assignment that you can be absent from, ignore everyone else or treat everyone else badly, and then add your name at the end and hand the assignment in to go, yeah, I'm with them. I loved people. The evidence will be shown in your life and in the lives of other people. This requires us each to play our part with love. So let me ask you, is there someone that you're avoiding? Is there someone that you are avoiding? Now, I'm not talking about wise and healthy boundaries. That's a message I've given before and I'll give again another day. But today I'm just talking about the people that you're avoiding because it's just, you can't be bothered anymore. It's just too hard. It's too complicated. And so rather than actively love them as you interact with them, you avoid and you stay away. And I do this. So I'm pretty sure it's safe to presume that there's at least one other person here today who does this as well. That we keep certain people at arm's length. That we hold back. That we withdraw because I just can't today. If I refuse to love someone with that practical, gritty, active love, I'm not carrying my weight in Jesus' group assignment. If there's someone that I refuse to actively love, I'm the one who's dropping the ball in the group assignment. So is there someone that you need to love again so that you don't let the rest of us down in Jesus' group assignment? Then we come to the other great thing that Jesus left us with. We call this one the Great Commission. And this is from Jesus' final words before he ascended into heaven. And Jesus at this point had died, completely, bodily, physically died. And then his followers saw him again in front of them, completely, bodily, physically alive again. There was no doubt in their mind that this had happened, that Jesus had completely died. And then he was there again. And they were still trying to wrap their heads around it. And Jesus had said to them, you know, come and meet me in this place. And so we pick up the story in Matthew 28, verse 16. Then the 11 disciples, Judas isn't with them anymore by this point, they left to go to Galilee and they went to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go. And when they saw him, they worshipped him. But some doubted. When they saw him, they worshipped him. He was there. They started to connect the dots. They started to realize that what he said has happened. He said he would die. He said he would rise again. He claimed to be the Jewish Messiah. He claimed to be the Son of God. This really is him, fulfilling all prophecies, fulfilling all predictions, fulfilling all of his own claims. It has actually happened. He is right here. And they worshipped him. But even though Jesus was alive and right there in front of them, some doubted. Can you imagine, of the 11, some of them still doubted? There is room for you to come to Jesus with your doubts. In fact, Jesus invited them to come. He told them where to meet him. Jesus knew exactly what was going on in their hearts. He invited them to come with their doubts. He doesn't require strict and complete agreement on absolutely everything. He invites us to come. And at this point, it's an individual invitation to come and bring your doubts. Bring your fears, bring your uncertainties, bring your questions, but still come. Now, Jesus himself, the person, the man, the Son of God, is at the center of our faith. And he invites us to come and draw closer to him, to walk with him, even with our doubts. Which is fantastic news, because sometimes I doubt. Is Jesus really here, you know, by his Spirit with us today, or are we just making it up? Am I really okay with God because of Jesus, just like we celebrated in communion, am I really okay with God? Am I really following him? Am I really forgiven or am I not? You know, what is going to happen after I die? What will that be like? What will being face to face with God be like? And how will I go with judgment? And by Jesus' invitation to his disciples, he also invites us that it's okay to have doubts. Jesus invited the doubters to come. And as we're about to read in the very next line, he sent the doubters to go on his behalf. For him, he sent the doubters out as his representatives, with full knowledge of the doubts that they still carried. So if you have doubts from time to time, if you have doubts all the time, that is no barrier to you coming to Jesus. He doesn't have an anti-doubt shield around him that will repel you, that you won't be able to get close. You can come to him, keep coming to him, walk with him, even serve him with your doubts. So in the very next verse, to those who worshipped him and to those who doubted, Jesus said to them in verse 18, I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth. Therefore, go and make disciples like you are, make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I've given you. And be sure of this, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. It was only a couple of months ago we had a guest speaker here, Steve Drinkle from Brisbane, and he spoke on this exact passage and focused on the part where Jesus said, teach these new disciples to obey all the commands I've given you. These commands, this way of Jesus, is for each of us to do and for us to do together and for us to teach other people, new followers of Jesus, to also do. And so Steve gave us his helpful summary of everything that he, and at that time the church that he was part of, I can't remember how long ago, maybe 10 years ago or something, they started to look and read and study, and what did Jesus actually ask us to do? We know the 613 commands in the Old Testament, but what did Jesus actually command us to do that we're supposed to teach to others? And they summarized it into these 7 points. That Jesus asked us to trust God with our life. That he asked us to love our neighbors as ourselves. That Jesus asked us to love our enemies and pray for them. To hold our possessions loosely. To be humble. To reform yourself before others. And to receive the Spirit. Each of these things, each of these 7 things, is really quite easy to understand. And each of them is so hard to do. We keep going around and around and coming back to just these 7 things. And each time around, we accumulate a little bit more understanding. We accumulate a bit more experience and a bit more wisdom. But we never, ever graduate from doing them. Throughout our whole life, these are always the challenge ahead of us, the commands that Jesus asked us to do and to teach others to do as well. We always need to keep pursuing these things, this way of Jesus, and keep teaching them to others. And what I'm here to tell you today is that this way of Jesus, these commands of Jesus, are not just for you, and they're not just for me, they're also for us. This is a group assignment. This is what Jesus tasked the 11 to do as a group. And his words that they carried, they then tasked to every new community that they helped establish in every small town and every major city as they travel around in that first generation. Jesus didn't stand in front of the class and give them homework and say, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to have to hand this in individually on your own for marking. He gave it as a group assignment for them to work on together. Now, there are elements that you and I can only do by ourselves. Each of us is responsible for our relationship to God and what we do in teaching these things to others. But also, the whole thing, the Great Commission, as we've come to call it, is for us together. So, cheekily, I want to break down the word commission a little bit. This is our, we call it the Great Commission as our summary, but I just want to break it down into the two parts and misspell it for you. That a mission is just an important assignment that is given, and co is just an old Latin prefix that means jointly or together. So the Great Commission is our together assignment from Jesus. And when you think about it from a group assignment perspective, it makes you realize that we're going to have to work together. No matter how complicated it gets, no matter how difficult it is, no matter how much someone doesn't carry their weight or someone feels like they're doing it all on their own, this is Jesus' plan for us to work together in this group assignment. This is what he wanted. This is what he still wants, and this is how he designed his church and his kingdom to operate. But from another perspective, the fact that this is a group assignment is a huge relief. Oh, good. There's no way that I could do that on my own. I'm hopeless at most of those things. There's no way that I could do that on my own. If this was an individual assignment that I'm going to be marked on entirely by myself, well, you know, this plan is doomed from the start. But I'm also not just going to need huge inspiration and motivation and help from God, I'm also going to need everyone else who is also co-missioned. So when Jesus gave his followers the great commandment and the great commission, they were never meant to be individual challenges. They were always meant to be group assignments, because he sent his disciples and he sends us as communities of people to work together in the world, representing him, teaching people about him and helping people also follow him. And this is true for the global church all throughout history. You know, we here at the Lakes Church are only one very small part of the church in history that's been around for 2,000 years. We're just one very small blip in history. And we're also only one very small part of the global church. There are churches all over the world, in every single part of the world, in every kind of language, followers of Jesus. And even in Cairns, we're only one small part of the church in Cairns. There's lots of wonderful, faithful churches here that we don't compete with, but we value and we work together where we can. But the part that we own is important. What's our part in this commission? What is God asking the Lakes Church to do? The people who would call themselves part of our church community, what is his commission for us? What is our together assignment? And for the last several months, we've been working on this. Our pastoral leaders and our staff have spent lots of time reading, listening, discerning, praying, discussing, trying to get to the essence of basically just what is our language to describe our co-mission from Jesus. And then together with all of you, inviting you into vision prayer nights a couple of times in the last few months. The vision statement stuff will come later, but at the top level, the purpose level, the what are we called together here to do level, this is our group assignment. To love people and invite them to join us in a growing relationship with Jesus. This is what we are here together to do. To love people together and to invite them to join us in a growing relationship with Jesus. And I firmly believe that this language, this sentence, is our group assignment, our together assignment from God, because it reflects the words of Jesus that we've already read today. Because of the people that have been committing this to prayer and to group discernment, and because we've taken it wider to the whole church a couple of times, and this is not, you know, like we haven't just come up with this over a weekend, but the thing was so stretched because of COVID that over the last 18 months, we've been taking this prayerful discernment to get clarity about it. And so now, believing that this mission statement is inspired by God and is for us as a church community, this is our part, we can use it to be inspired, to help us focus, to intentionally take steps towards this as a church. Now, it's not brand new. It's not particularly groundbreaking. We're not starting from ground zero. These are familiar concepts. And the concepts aren't unique just to our church. In some way, every church could express this stuff. But this mission statement, the language that God helped us to put together, will help us as the Lakes Church stay on the same page and help us work together in this group assignment. So let me share just a few thoughts that I find encouraging, I find inspiring and helpful about this statement. Love people. That this is our first posture with every single person that I come in contact with and that we as a church come in contact with. Active, practical, gritty love and acceptance. To invite them. That the posture that our church has is not to lead. And it's also not even, I don't think, to confront, but it's to invite. How people respond to Jesus is up to them, but it's our responsibility to invite them to join us in a growing relationship with him. Now that growing relationship, Jesus isn't really that interested in someone who prays a prayer one day and then nothing else ever changes in their life. He's not interested in someone being baptized one day and then nothing else ever happening for the rest of their life spiritually. He's interested in that growing relationship, that ongoing dynamic connection throughout your entire life. Going back and back to those seven commands because we never outgrow them, we never master them. Continually dependent on him throughout our entire life in that growing relationship should be true of every single one of us. And to join us in this. So each of us here at the Lakes Church are in a growing relationship with Jesus like this. Or if you're not, you're at least on the journey. You might be like those people before Jesus, you know, they worshipped him, but some doubted that you're coming to Jesus as part of our church, bringing your doubts and your questions, exploring things along the way. And I'm so glad that you're here. But there are many more people that Jesus wants us to invite to join us in this growing relationship with him. There are many more people in Cairns, many more people who will move to Cairns in the years to come. And God has called our church not just to our own growth in depth, but also at the exact same time to our growth in width as we invite others to join us in that growing relationship. So we are a church community made up of people in a growing relationship with Jesus. And our role, our together assignment, is to love people and invite them to join us in that. Which sounds so easy when you put it up on the screen and you just read it out as a sentence. That, oh, fantastic, done. We've got that nailed. That should be easy. We could probably put that up on the wall and it will just start to happen and away we go. But you know that loving people is messy and it's hard. And you know that inviting people is scary and it's risky. And you know that growing is stretching and painful. So we can't do this by ourselves. This is not our good work to contribute to the society of Cairns. This is our commission from Jesus, inspired and empowered by him. Remember, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to him, and he is with us the whole way through. But also, I can't do this on my own. I can't do this by myself and then print it and hand it in. And in the same way, you know, if this is our together assignment from Jesus, you know, we kind of share it today publicly for the very first time and then I disappear for a few years and then come back and kind of add my name in at the end. And so, you know, here you go. I was part of this. That's not going to work. This requires each of us, all of us, to contribute to this group assignment. Our whole church needs to be geared towards this. So if this is true, I believe it is, but if this is true, if this is what Jesus is calling us to, what will that require of me? If this is true, what will it require of you? Have you been holding back from Jesus because of your doubts? Not realizing that he invites you to come and bring them to him. Would you be prepared to come to Jesus, to bring your doubts and bring your questions to him? Next week, we're going to have the baptism pool filled up for anyone who's ready to make that decision of commitment to Jesus. Or have you been holding back from loving someone recently? Is there someone else in our church community that you have been avoiding? Is there something that you need to say? Have you been flying solo when the hardest thing, but the best growth for you, would be to join a group as part of our church? Or is there someone in your life that's hard to love that you need to give another opportunity to today? Maybe you've been holding back from our church community by not joining a team to serve. You know, you're the person in the class that just stayed silent when the group assignment was given. Just, you know, sit back, make sure you don't make eye contact, just keep really, really still so you're not noticed. Letting other people take the jobs. You know, we have a whole bunch of teams that serve as part of our church. During the week, on Sundays, in the church, outside the church, and there is not a single team that has enough people. Every single team in our church would love to have you join to help and play your part. I can't even prioritize them for you today, or I would have a riot from the other teams who go, no, that's not true. Mine is actually the most important and more needy. If you don't know where to start, then we would love to help you. But if you've been holding back because you're not sure, or you know, you just don't know how your roster would work out, just start the conversation and we'd love to help you. Maybe you've been holding back from giving financially to our church because you've been distracted, or you've lost confidence, or you feel like you've needed it in other areas of your life. I want to challenge you today, invite you today to reconsider that. If we're going to do this mission that Jesus has given us to do, it's going to take everyone to play their part. And the very last one, I saved the hardest one for last. Is there someone in your life that needs an invitation to join you as part of our church? Is there someone in your life that doesn't even know that they could come to church? That they would be allowed to come to church? That they could come and lightning wouldn't strike them? That not everyone here has two heads? That people wouldn't look at them funny? That they wouldn't be able to understand the language that we speak? Is there someone in your life that needs an invitation to join you in a growing relationship with Jesus? And I save this for last because this is the biggest challenge for me. I want to grow in every area that I've talked about. I need to grow in every area, in coming to Jesus with my doubts, in not withholding love from people, in serving regularly and faithfully, in giving sacrificially. But the one that confronts me the most is inviting others to join us. Now that might surprise you. You might think that this is all I do every day, is just invite other people to join us. But this is the one in the things that I've talked about that I personally find the hardest. But I don't want to drop the ball in our group assignment. So I know there are people in my life, I have their faces in my mind and I can tell you their names, that need to be invited. How they respond is up to them, but it's my part in our group assignment to invite them. So if this is what Jesus is calling us to do, to love people and invite them into a growing relationship with him, what will that require of me? And what will it require of you? I'm going to give some time this morning for you to think and for you to pray. Because I believe for each one of us, there's something like that. Maybe it's an easy thing, maybe it's a really hard thing, but there's something that Jesus requires of you if we are going to fulfill his co-mission. So let me pray and invite him to speak to us, and then I'm just going to leave some space for you to think and pray. Jesus, as I stand here, I trust you with this statement that we've talked about today. I trust that this is from you, inspired by you, and it's right for us to take hold of it and to pursue it as a church. And we know that nothing that we do without you is going to have much effect. We need you in this. And also, we need each other. We need every single person who is part of our church. And so I just want to invite you to speak in the next few moments to each of us. If this is the case, if this is true, if this is what you've called us to, what is that going to require of me? Jesus said one day in talking about following him, said, no one builds a building or starts building a building without first counting the cost. How much is it going to cost? Can we afford it? Could we finish this building? And obviously he means that some people do that and then look pretty silly when the building is left half built. This morning the invitation is not to a rash decision or a quick reaction or a yep without thinking it through, but to count the cost. If this is the church community that God has called me to be part of, then what does that require of me? And so Jesus, as we wrestle with that, as you help us count the cost, we ask that you would lead each of us to a point of conviction, of decision, of rightness about where you've called us to be and what this requires of us today and into the future. In your name.